Welcome to the 13th episode of Frank Online Marketing, brought to you by IBM Canada. My name is Tema Frank. I just got back from several days in Victoria, where I had the pleasure of interviewing a group of really exciting entrepreneurs doing very cool things out on the coast. It's easy, I think, when you're sitting in Toronto or even here in Edmonton, to imagine that you are the center of the universe and nothing's going on anywhere else except for San Francisco. But these folks certainly put that myth to rest. This first interview that I'm playing for you is one I did with Stephen Harris, who's the chief operating officer of a brand new company called TikToking. TikToking is trying to create a new social media platform that is based on shared interests, sort of like Pinterest, only instead of photographs, it's conversations. What they're hoping to be able to do is introduce people via a common interest where they start a conversation on one thing, but ultimately let them broaden out and discover new people and new ideas that they might not have otherwise thought about or got involved in. It's an interesting concept. As you'll hear in the interview, I did have some fairly tough questions for them, and it's because they are so new, they haven't really answered all the questions yet. But I do think there is some potential for what they're doing. In some ways, it's almost like a cross between Facebook and a dating site, a place to meet new people, where you've got things in common. In fact, I wonder if it kind of will evolve into a dating site. It would certainly be a great place to get to know somebody and know what they really care about. The full interview lasted for about an hour, and obviously that's too long for me to play here, so I had to do some pretty rigorous editing. What I will do, though, is I'll put up the full uncut interview for those of you who are really interested, because we did have a very interesting, wide-ranging conversation. And what I've tried to focus on in the podcast part is the stuff that I thought was most relevant to people wanting to figure out how to market their own businesses online. So here we go, and I will talk to you after the interview.
I'm Stephen Harris. The company is TikToking, and the tick of TikToking, T-I-C, it stands for Things in Common. And so we're a new interest-based social network starting up. The idea actually started with a fellow named Doug Campbell, who's a retired architect in town. And one of his grown daughters said to him one day, "Hey, Dad, you should be on Facebook." He said, "Okay, I'm not really a tech guy, but sure, tell me why. Why would Facebook help me?" And she said, "Well, you know, you can connect with your friend George and make plans to play golf and do all kinds of great things." And Doug's response was, "Well, when I want to play golf with George, I pick up the phone and call George and we make plans, and that's kind of covered." He said, "But, you know, I'm really interested in traveling in India, and I'm really into acrylic painting. Can I use Facebook to help me find, you know, maybe another retired architect who likes acrylic painting and travels through India?" And the response is, "Well, you have to sort of know that person first on Facebook. It's based on who you already know." So that's where this idea sort of started rolling, and Doug sort of set out, and without any background in technology and social media or any of that, started to pull a team together to develop a social network where you could find people who shared those things in common, those ticks, as they called them. And that was the start of TikToking.
I've noticed, certainly in Edmonton, I'm sure elsewhere, there are these online meetup groups. Mm-hmm. How would this be different from something like that?
It's a similar kind of idea, right? It's about finding people that share that common interest where you can have that discussion online. What we're trying to really do is build something that is quite global, and it's about making relationships with people who you would have never otherwise met. Mm-hmm. The serendipity aspect of TikToking is one of those interesting things. And we sort of use the analogy of a cocktail party, and you're sort of walking around a room in a cocktail party, and you hear a snippet of a conversation, and you might pop over and listen in and contribute. And conversations naturally kind of wind their way. It's like a river flowing, right? You know, it starts on topic X, and then someone mentions something, and then the topic now moves to topic Y, and then topic Z, and it sort of moves around. Mm-hmm. And that's some of the interesting stuff for us, is that as we watch the conversations happen on the site, you know, a topic that starts with "my favorite place in the world to travel is blah, whatever." Mm-hmm. People start talking about it, and, you know, "So why is that place so great? No, I've been here, and what about this?" And watching those conversations sort of move and evolve. So while we're interest-based, and each conversation sort of has its starting point, there's no real end point. We want to try and encourage and allow that serendipity to happen. Hmm. And as that happens, as you have these discussions with people, you find that what we have been finding with our users is that they're making connections with people around the world who they would have never otherwise found, mm-hmm. and discovering some interests that they had never really thought about. You know, I find myself when I'm on the site and I'm chatting with someone about one thing. Very often it ends up in some other discussion where I say, oh, you know, yeah, that actually is something interesting to me. Hmm. It's sort of a facilitative process, right? Because right. if you sat down with me and said, you know, name me the 10 things that you're really absolutely passionate about, I could probably pull a couple. You know, I'm mm-hmm. a parent of a young daughter, so, you know, parenting, and I like mountain biking and this and that. But really getting to some of those other things that I'm actually interested in, it's not necessarily the tip of my tongue.
Right.
So as we go through this process of engaging with people and chatting with people online, you can start to, some of those things start to surface. We've also got a built-in language translation feature through another Canadian company called Ortspo. Yeah. You know, you have these conversations with people in multiple languages.
That's very cool.
We've had people from Nepal and China and Poland and the Ukraine and all over the world. We've got people that are communicating. And part of Doug Campbell's original vision for this, as an architect and a very visual kind of guy, there's something very appealing about the look of the world's languages. So we didn't want to just sort of just flop a translation on it. We wanted to show the original language as well, and there's lots of things you can do with it down the road. But just, you know, seeing what other languages, especially languages that don't use, you know, a Western alphabet.
Yeah. Right?
You know, someone writing in Russian, that Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting kind of thing just to look at, just visually. It's an appealing sort of thing. And you have that sense that, well, now I'm connected with someone who I would have never been able to connect with.
Yeah. How does the translation thing work? Is that real time somehow? Or?
It is, yeah. So there's a Canadian company called Ortspo. We've had some really good success with some of those conversations that have gone back and forth in multiple languages.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. Roughly what proportion would you say end up communicating with people in different languages? Do you have any idea?
You know, it's still a fairly small number, and part of it is because, you know, maybe it's our sort of Canadian-centric view of things that mm-hmm. we would assume that people in other parts of the world would just love to have these conversations in their own language. And like we were chatting about earlier, sometimes you get to these other countries and meet these people in other countries, and they just desperately want to work on their English. So we have, you know, and English is really becoming sort of a almost standard language mm-hmm. online, right? I mean, it's there.
Who's your typical user?
We had an idea initially that our target market, when we were sort of just really, really early stages, before we even really had a product, and mm-hmm. we're sort of, you know, trying to guess what the market would be, we had some thoughts that, well, you know, sort of maybe, you know, women sort of, you know, 35 to 55, you know, part of what we're trying to do is encourage slightly deeper conversations, you know, something more than just sort of the real snippet that you get from Twitter, more than just sort of the keeping up with your friends and family you already have on Facebook. We wanted to have some place where you have some deeper conversations and...
Women that age are way too busy, I'd say.
And that was exactly what we found, right? We had this, like, well, you know, women tend to have deeper conversations, you know? This is who we're looking for.
Right.
And the response very often was, I'm busy with kids and a job and too much other stuff already. I've got too many friends to keep track of. Yeah. I really am not looking for someone new.
Right.
That said, I mean, you know, we're sort of open and appealing to everyone, but mm-hmm. this is part of what we're doing right now because we're still early on.
When was it launched?
Well, we sort of had, we made a decision that we would build the airplane in the air, so to speak. So it's been live since last summer, but unlike a lot of sites, we didn't have it sort of behind a wall building away and then, you know, sign up for a waiting list and then click, we'll turn it on. We've been sort of constantly iterating. So it's been open for a while. We're aiming for sort of a proper launch in mid-February. February 15th is our day that we're shooting for. All right, we've got most of the hard development work done, and now we're ready to sort of go. We've got a contest running right now that we started January 1.
Okay.
And that was sort of really our first push to actually go out and actively recruit users. You know, while the site's been open, and we've been sort of keeping a presence on other social media sites and Twitter and Facebook and the rest, we haven't really been actively looking for users because we're still so early. We're still building, still learning about what that target market might be, and, you know... So we're just in the very early stages right now of bringing folks in and actually starting to put a bit of a push on the marketing and user recruitment and user retention side. So that's just starting. Right? The contest runs until Valentine's Day. We're giving away a trip for two, essentially anywhere in the world. We've got a pile of airline tickets that we can give away. So the contest piece has been interesting. The entry comes from signing up and entering a conversation. We added a secondary piece onto that where you can gain additional entries by, you know, every day that you come back and engage in other conversations, you get another entry. what we didn't want to have happen was a pile of people pop in. You know, user recruitment is one thing. User retention is really what you need to do. A customer recruitment, it's the same deal, right? You don't want a one-time, you want repeats.
Right.
So we're building this to sort of bring people back and keep people coming back. And the contest got listed on a couple of contest websites, Red Flag Deals. And there's this whole subculture of people that had no idea existed. They call themselves sweepers, who do nothing but enter sweepstakes and contests around the world. And so that drove a ton of traffic to us. Some of those people who enter contests for a regular basis are probably not typically really brand loyal, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to sort of enter whatever contest and go off to the next one. Mm-hmm. It's part of the reason we wanted to do that piece where, you know, every day come on back and sort of pull them in and try and give them enough of an experience that they might actually stick around. You know, that notion of 21 days to sort of create or break a habit, right? Yeah. So if we can keep them going for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, we're hoping we can get that. Mm-hmm. But that's been a really interesting experience for us because we've seen this mix of people from all over the world as these contest sites started, one feeds to another and feeds to another, and we're getting all these folks that are driving in. So that's been a huge source of traffic for us. It's been interesting to watch, and it's an interesting experience.
From what you can see, are they starting to really get into conversations?
They are, yeah. there's an active conversation about the actual act of contesting.
That's what I would have figured.
There's quite a few on that. Lots of conversations about travel, you know, like where would you go if you won this prize? But there's just a huge range of interesting conversations that get going.
Now, how would this be different from things like, you know, the old Yahoo groups, which still exist? Mm-hmm. There are lots of online groups, bulletin boards, discussions. How is this different?
There's certainly those similarities on the bulletin boards and forums and all those things. The forums and bulletin boards tend to be sort of expert type people, right? It's people who are deeply into that, and it's almost a bit of a closed thing, right? You have to, if you're really into programming in whatever, C++, it's all the people who are really into programming, computers, and C++ are there. Mm-hmm. What we're looking for is sort of a broader interest-based experience, so that you've got some general interest in stuff. You don't need to be an expert. You don't need to worry about that you can't keep up with the conversation. The other piece that we're really trying to build is that sense of connecting with others sort of outside of your group.
Let's come back into the target market. So you concluded the women 18 to whatever were not the right market. Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing in terms of, and do you have actual demographic data? Do people provide that when they sign up?
They do. We actually get a fairly rich source of demographic data for folks. And part of what we're seeing, it's tough at the moment because we still have, you know, fairly small numbers. We've got people from about 35 countries around the world, but there's not a huge quantum.
How many people do you have signed up?
We just broke our first 1,000
signups
over this. So that's, you know, from starting a couple of weeks ago, it's
not
been
bad.
It's been a decently quick growth. Yeah. And that's one of the tough things in sort of identifying what your market might be. We've got, you know, everything from 18-year-old boys to grandmothers in their 70s. And there's the whole mix on there. And, of course, we'd like to say, well, you know, we're open to everyone, we'd like everyone. But we certainly recognize you have to get, you know, a bit narrow on, like, who's the core user that you really want to drive for. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of what we're
still trying
learning,
to figure
right?
out.
Yeah, it's about learning that kind of stuff right now.
How ultimately are you guys going to make money out of this? Or do you hope that you will?
It's definitely a business, and you know there's the standard stuff, right? The advertising and sponsorship models. The appeal of interest-based online stuff is that's much more appealing to the company that has something to sell, right? You know, you can sort of broadcast, "Hey, I've got these things for sale to everyone in the world," and hope people who actually want those things pick it up, or you can really narrowly target focused on those key things, right? So I'm a squash player, so when I use Gmail, occasionally I'll get the ads pop up on the side for squash stuff. And it gets it right half the time. Because I occasionally get little Gmail pop-up ads for, hey, the latest butternut squash seeds are on sale at so-and-so. So, you know, so I know they're scanning my content and they see the word squash and they do their thing. So we're looking to go beyond sort of just that, a couple of keyword analysis, and really look at the full content of conversations and the interests that people actually have. And part of our hypothesis is that if you can present ads and messages and sponsorships that are really targeted to you on the things you're actually interested in, they cease to be an annoyance, right? When I get the pop-up ad for something random, it's just an annoyance. I'm clicking the X to get out of there as quick as I can. Mm-hmm. the occasional time when I get a pop-up that is actually targeted to me is relevant. Hey, you know, mountain bike sale in Victoria at this shop. It's like, God, it's not an annoyance. It's right. It's actually helpful.
Yeah.
So that's one of our pieces that we're looking at on the monetization side.
You've got a point. I mean, if you've got such clearly defined interests, that does give you an opportunity to match the ads quite nicely.
Yeah. So we know where people are when they're posting, when they sign up, you know mm-hmm. where you live and what you're interested in. And as you start to develop your profile and use the site, it does get some fairly specific information, right?
That's okay.
And it's information that would potentially be out there in lots of other places. There's nothing mm-hmm. magical about this idea.
How do you prevent this from, one of the things that I've seen has happened with LinkedIn groups mm-hmm. is they've become really spammy, mm-hmm. 99% of them, where mm-hmm. people are just trying to flog whatever they sell that they think would be relevant to the people in that group.
Yeah.
How are you going to prevent that from happening?
You know, it's one of the challenges you've got as we're so young and fresh and starting out, right? I mean, it's definitely one of those issues we have to continually wrestle with, right? Mm-hmm. We want users, you need the numbers of people to come in for a whole pile of reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Not only that you can potentially monetize on this down the road, but as we were chatting about earlier, about just learning about who your market is and mm-hmm. you know, who are your customers. At this point, you know, the numbers are still small enough that we can sort of manually control those. We also find that, I think like on a lot of these sites, there's some user curation. The users themselves will take care of it. You know, we had our first sort of kind of trollish kind of behavior, right? Someone who was posting, you know, weird stuff, the religious kind of, you know, anti-gay, whatever else it was. And so we're watching this starting to happen, and we're like having the discussion, like, what are we going to do? You know, do we ban this guy? Because the comments weren't over the top, and it was a legitimate conversation, but they were right on that edge. And, you know, pretty quickly, the other users in that conversation kind of shut it down on their own. You know, it's a challenge that every social site faces, right? I mean, you know, the yeah. internet is filled with various forms of bad behavior, and it's one of those things that we're going to have to sort of figure out. There's always that push and pull between freedom and letting, you know, users do what they're going to do and trying to guide the experience to what we're hoping the experience would be. And part of the initial idea was we want this to be a little different and a little deeper than other social sites. We want you to actually connect with people and have some deeper connection and build a bit of what we call digital empathy. Right? Mm-hmm. So I've had some conversations with this guy in Nepal. I don't know anyone else in Nepal. And before this, right, if I had have read that there was some, you know, terrible landslide and an entire village in Nepal has been wiped out, and I read that in the paper, I'd say, wow, that's tragic. And I'd turn the page and I'd read the next story. Now that I know my friend Lat Sharing Glan in Nepal that I met on TikTok and we've chatted a few times, when I hear that, I've got some empathy. Like, I know someone there, and I might be tempted to pull out the checkbook and write a check to the Red Cross and do something. That's part of our overall thing, right? We want to sort of build a site where there's some of that, right? We're doing some good in the world, right? A social network with a social conscience is one of the taglines we've used for some of our things. We do lots of charity work. That said, how hard do we force that versus letting users sort of define, you know, how they're going to use the site? We don't really know what people will use the site for and how they'll use it.
It does strike me, though, that you're really running the risk of the real con artists taking advantage. I mean, your example of, I would want to help this person mm-hmm. now that we've become friends. I was just listening to an item the other day about all these people who are being taken advantage of by mm-hmm. supposed relationships that they've developed on online dating sites, a lot of which now have become infiltrated by con artists.
Yeah. It's a significant challenge. I mean, there's some technological things you can do to sort of filter out the bots and the other stuff, and you can sort of get a sense of who people are. But online is no different than in real life, right? There are bad people with bad intentions who will sort of try and find a way to get around the system.
Yeah.
It's a fact of life. I'm sure it's just a matter of time before the first person on TikTok and posts something porn-ish. Right? It's going to happen, right? That's what happens online.
Sure.
It's about how we sort of build the culture of the site. You know, culture is an interesting word, actually. When I was doing my thesis a few years ago, and organizational culture was a big piece of what I was looking at, the best definition of culture that I found was, culture is the way we do things around here. Essentially, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
And so you have an opportunity, whether it's in an organization, and your business, and your family, and your social group, whatever it might be, to sort of set that culture, right? You can let it be set for you just by however people do their own things, and that becomes the culture. One of the things we're trying to do, I think, to address some of those concerns, the spammers, the creeps, all the other stuff that can happen online, is if you can build that culture where we say, like, listen, this is not what this place is about. And if the rest of us who are here say, this is not what we're about, you know, we're about trying to build that digital empathy and learn about other parts of the world and have deeper discussions. And if that becomes the culture, it's very difficult for an outsider to chip away and change that, right? Because the culture is really, really tough to change. I mean, it's the reason organizations get stuck in certain paradigms for years. I mean, there's an entire industry of change management consultants that try and change that.
Right.
So that's part of what we're trying to build. Early on, we're very active engaging with new users and sort of helping to set that tone.
Now, it looked like you guys have sort of set up a bunch of groups to start with to get things going. But any user can come on and create a group of any interest that appeals to them.
Yeah.
And then how would they find people, or it just somehow gets posted? Like, how does the word get out that a group has just started about, you know, left-handed joggers in Vancouver?
Yeah. So all of the conversations that are on the site now are user created, right? They pop in and they start the conversations on whatever. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're in the midst of building right now is a categorization system. One of the things that we learned early on happening is it can be just overwhelming, right? It was sort of like the experience of if your target market is absolutely everyone, you really don't have any target market, right? If you're about everything in the world, you're really about nothing.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of blowing people's hair back. They'd see, like, you know, conversation with my favorite book and where I want to travel and left-handed joggers in Vancouver and all kinds of stuff. So we're adding a categorization function to sort of start to narrow things down a little bit, right?
Okay.
So you can say, I'm interested in politics and spirituality and history or whatever. You know, pick your big categories, and then things get slotted in those categories. You start to narrow it down from there. We're starting to do some work now on the search engine side, right, to find those people who share something in common. Very much like language translation, search is another one of those things that it's not perfect yet. We've done a little bit of work with a company out of here in Victoria that builds sort of these learning algorithms that can sort of see what you've looked for in the past and what your conversations are, and getting some context and the whole piece around semantic analysis and, you know, what is it that you're trying to say? What's the tone? What are you looking for? And then we can start to match people up, right? We want to give you some recommendations. Hey, you've talked about this and this and this. You might also be interested in talking about that. And here's someone who's been talking about that, because we've seen that others who talk about, you know, if you chat quite a bit about cycling and running and fitness, we think you might also be interested in talking to Jim about triathlons. And so that's part of what we're trying to build towards, where you have that chance to sort of meet people based on some of your things in common, as opposed to when you asked earlier about sort of the meetup groups and the forums that are very, very narrowly specific.
Mm-hmm.
We want to sort of go just a bit beyond that, right? So things in common. It's not identical stuff that you and I exactly have. We've got some things in common.
Right.
You like running, I like cycling. We could probably have some similar things in common.
Right.
And that's part of what we're trying to go, right? We sort of build those relationships and learn about those things you hadn't really thought about, meet the friends you didn't know you wanted to meet.
Cool.
Meet those, you know, discover the interests that you didn't know you were even remotely interested in.
In terms of topics so far, are there any that have been created that surprised you?
You know, there's been such a wide range of topics where people sort of pop in to talk about any number of things. One of the things that I try and do in sort of my role as sort of editor-in-chief on the site and sort of trying to engage with new folks on the site is asking a lot of why questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when someone says, well, I really love this book, and sort of just bringing them back in, but, you know, as an interviewer, you know what this is like. You ask someone, so why is that appealing to you?
Right.
And let people just tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
And so the original subject almost doesn't matter too much. When you get someone to tell a story about why this thing, you know, why they love this movie or this book, or why they love traveling to this part of the world, or why they love this charity, or why they love this art, whatever it might be, they start to tell a story. From a marketing perspective, and from sort of that online sales and advertising, how that all works, when you tell a story, it's impossible for the person hearing or reading that story not to start to share a little bit of empathy, right? It triggers a part of your brain where you put yourself in that situation, right? When you're telling me a story and I'm thinking, what would I do if I was in France and at a university and all that kind of stuff, and that part of your brain where emotions ride, where empathy lives. It's called the amygdala, a little chunkier brain. And it's the same part of your brain where decisions are made, right? Your decisions are not made in your frontal cortex with lots of complex thoughts, right? We've all been through paralysis by analysis, right? You think about things too much. And sometimes you just say, I'm just going this way because it just feels right. And feels right is a great
expression. Seth Godin's lizard brain.
Exactly, right? Yeah, exactly. So you go, as we sort of have people sort of engaging and telling their story, but telling why something is important. And that's what sort of moves other people to be interested and build that empathy. Mm-hmm. On the, you know, on the business side of this, part of what we want to try and build is for a marketer, if you can get your customers and your audience to sort of engage with you at that kind of a level where there's some emotion involved, that's where you can that's where you drive action. That's where they say, yes, I'd like to buy this thing, or, you know, I want some more information with that. So it's a two-way street, right? Because we want that depth of conversation because it's an appealing kind of thing, right? We want to have those deep conversations. Putting my business hat on, we want to have those kind of deep conversations and those kind of emotional interactions with people, because that's what you're looking for from a marketer. It's not just that, well, I like mountain biking and I live in Victoria, right? Mm-hmm. You want to know why I really like that. You know, that's the sure. key piece, right? Because sure, you can show me an ad for a mountain bike and from a shop in Victoria, and that's great. If you really know it's because I love getting out in the rain and getting muddy and getting a ton of exercise, that might change the message that you present to me, right? Mm-hmm. You want to sort of target based on my interest as opposed to what you've got to sell. And that's the second piece of that whole interest-based network.
Interesting. There's been a lot of discussion, certainly on things like newspaper sites and YouTube and so, about if people can have an assumed identity, mm-hmm. they tend to be more outrageous, more mm-hmm. rude, whatever.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with that issue, fake versus real identities?
It was a decision we made early on to allow people to sort of reveal as much or as little about yourself as you want. Right? So if you want to have an assumed identity, mm-hmm. You're able to do that. I think what we're trying to do, going back to the discussion about culture and modeling things, is trying to model things in a way that people feel comfortable to share more about themselves. You know, here's my actual name, and here's what I actually look like. So they feel that they've got enough trust that they would actually do that. Most because it enriches the experience, right? I mean, it's tough to have a meaningful discussion and relationship with someone who you don't know what they look like, where they are, what their real name is.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, it does invite that sort of kind of flamey troll kind of behavior that can happen, because you can sort of hide behind your wall and lob bombs in. Surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, but of the 1,000 or so folks that have come on in the last couple of weeks, most are quite willing to use their actual identity and, you know, pick a name and show their face. And we've got the standard social login, so you can sign up with your Twitter account or Facebook and pull that information.
Now, most people do that?
There's quite a few that do. There's nothing that says your Twitter or Facebook account is your real one either.
Right.
So as far as we know, I mean, we're seeing, you know, people with first name, last name, and a face.
Yeah.
And it seems quite real. One of the things we learned from the contest folks that sign up, that a lot of them maintain sort of a separate, not necessarily separate identity, but, you know, they've got a separate Twitter or Facebook profile and separate email, just because, I mean, for it's almost like a job for some of these people. Like, you know, 6 hours a day, they're entering contests and, you know, you can imagine the amount of response emails you get from every company in the world that the contests are run. So they have sort of a separate identity, but it's a separate real identity for them. So, it's been surprising, actually. We don't have a lot of pseudonyms and unknown people. People are quite willing to sort of share who they are and what they're about.
Are you going to go in the direction of video chats? I mean, with things like Google Hangouts now, you could.
We could, for sure. Yeah, I think anything's possible.
How are you promoting it? So you've got this contest. Mm-hmm. Now, in the contest, is there also a social sharing element?
Yeah. In terms of our promotion, it's been a lot of grassroots social sharing stuff. Twitter and Google Plus and Facebook presence and pushing our stuff that way. It's really only been the last couple of weeks we've started to do some media and pushing out and chatting with podcasters and bloggers and folks around the world to try and start to push that. The next wave is not who you know. Mm-hmm. The next wave is who you are and what you're interested in. And so people are starting to catch on to that.
So there's really nothing like this out there?
Not specifically.
What's the closest?
You're seeing more things. Like Branch is a new startup.
Okay.
And they're in the same general space, sort of conversation, interest-based kind of stuff, but they're a little bit different.
How are they different?
Their angle is sort of more on branching a conversation, right? So a conversation starts with something and it shifts, right? The topic slightly shifts and it sort of moves over. So you have this sort of visual piece of conversations that sort of flow and move. And it's interesting, and they've got some decent backers behind them. Pinterest is really sort of the big boy on the block in terms of interest-based stuff.
Right.
Very, it's visual. It's 100%
right,
visual
it's
kind of stuff.
Not conversations.
Not conversation. But they were really the proof of concept that, the things that you're interested in are more, it's the next wave that goes beyond
right.
who you already know, right? When there was nothing, Facebook and connecting people that you already knew was great.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, been there, done that.
Right.
Now what? Right?
Yes.
And consumers are always looking for drumming their fingers. What's
Absolutely.
Next? What's next?
Absolutely.
I got that. Now I want to know something new. So, the interest-based space is really what's new, and that's where people are starting to move. Facebook is doing it a bit too, right, with the graph search that they came out with, right? This is sort of what they're heading towards, right? What are those things that you talk about? What are those things you're interested in? Because they know that the well of all of your past connections and just sort of keeping in touch with people is a little bit shallow, right? I mean,
yeah.
When I look at my Facebook friends list, it's a kid that I, sat behind me in fourth grade. We had nothing in common
yeah.
even in fourth grade. I mean, 30 years yeah. later, it's like, there's... Really, I mean, nice to stay
nice
in touch,
to,
I guess.
Yeah, nice to know that you're still alive and
yeah.
roughly what you've done. But
yeah, but, and that's sort of where people started to see that limitation. Right?
Are there any particular either challenges or advantages that you think you face by being based in Canada?
Well, the challenge is that the conventional wisdom is that if you're not in San Francisco or maybe New York, not around. I mean, everyone, that's where you have to go. That's where the money is, and that's where all the action is. That said, Canada is, and the West Coast for sure, Victoria and Vancouver, both have got, a pretty decent reputation. Like, there's been some interesting things that have, Flickr came out of here, right? Flock was a social browser that came out of here and got bought up by Zynga. And we're starting to get known a little bit. We're not sort of this weird backwater anymore. People at least know who we are and where we are. But will it be a challenge to overcome when it comes time to look for really big dollars? Right? We want to be here in Victoria and grow this from here. We'll see where the reality of needing money takes things. But, the plan is to be here and Canadian-based and leverage on that. And we certainly have, the majority of our users are in Canada for sure. But we have
to start with.
Yeah, to start, yes. Yeah, I think we're on the right track anyway. It's going well, and we're adding new people daily. Like our growth is moving up quickly, so yeah, it's been good.
I think it's exciting. I think it does have some potential. I must admit, when I first heard about it, I wasn't sold. Mm-hmm. Listening to you, I am. I just I guess because I was thinking, okay, how is this different from a bulletin board or mm-hmm. from something like that?
Yeah,
and it may be that in your marketing, you need to somehow communicate more of the serendipitous nature and how that can evolve.
He said at the end of the interview that by the end he had me sold on it. Well, not totally. I think for it to work, they really have to get that discovery engine that he talked about really working well, making it possible for me to have those sort of serendipitous cocktail party conversations, because without it, I don't really see how it's all that different from something like Yahoo Groups. If they can make it work, they do have a great business model. The ability for advertisers to promote to a very specific market, knowing what motivates those people, why they're motivated, and it gives the opportunity for the advertisers to do some fantastic, really well-honed, targeted advertising. I think he referred to it as narrow casting for advertisers, and I think that's got a lot of potential for them. From the viewpoint of marketers, I would say there are three key points that you should take away from this. One is that your actual users might not be who you imagine. You need to test and experiment and find out. Get to know who's really there and why they're there. And that may mean that you need to revise your plans. 2, contests can attract the wrong sorts of people. He talked about the community of sweepers, people who enter contests for a living. Now, in his case, that's not necessarily a bad thing because it was a way to get a lot of people in. And because his target market is so broad, if he can find a way now to get them interested enough to stay, he's got some real potential with them. For a lot of us, though, getting people to enter contests simply to broaden the pool won't necessarily help. We want specific types of people entering our contests. The third point that I think is a particularly interesting one is that you have the ability, both within your company and on your website, particularly if it's a socially oriented website, to cultivate a particular type of culture, to set expectations among your users and police things in a way that really makes those expectations become the norm. And then ultimately users will self-police. Well, I think that's all for tonight. I don't want to talk too long because it was a fairly lengthy interview. As always, I would love to hear your comments, your feedback on the show, your questions or ideas for other shows you'd like to hear. You can contact me by emailing Tema, T-E-M as in mother A, at frankonlinemarketing.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, etc. You can also call our toll-free number, 1-866-544-9262, or visit the website and comment there, where you'll also find the show notes. And you can also use our handy-dandy feature where you can leave a voicemail there. And if you are also a blogger or you've got a site that you'd like to promote, say something intelligent in your comment and leave your website URL, and I would be happy to play that on the show. Talk to you next week. Bye. Thank you.